Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strebel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
Verse 10 says, "And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever." Now you see, here's the third boy. Here's the big boy. Here's Satan himself. See? The number one of the trinity of evil. The devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. All right, now that's the end of Satan. He's judged. Now then, but what about verse 5, where it says, "This is the first resurrection"? And then verse 6, "Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power." All right. If there's a first resurrection, if that first resurrection only included the people of God, the children of God, then what about the rest of the dead? Look at verse 11. "And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the book, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works. And death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire." Now there, apparently, in that resurrection, only the wicked dead. The rest of the dead. What is the second death? And he tells us, "And death and Hades were cast in the lake of fire. This is the second death." Death and Hades. Now, not death and hell. Not Gehenna. Gehenna's not cast into Gehenna. But Hades, the place of departed spirits. That's where the, like the rich man and Lazarus, the rich man, what did it say? In Hades, not hell. But in Hades he lifted up his eyes. Where was he? He went to the place where the spirits of the wicked dead go. He didn't go to heaven. He went to Hades. All right? The righteous dead, they go to Hades also. But the Hades just simply means place of departed spirits. But the place of departed spirits for the righteous dead is a paradise or Abraham's bosom.
It's still there.
I cannot believe that Ephesians 5 is talking about that change or 6. Now the Bible speak in the Old Testament days, a man died. He was gathered to his people. 30 days later, after mourning for him, he was buried. Now, according to Jewish Jewish teachings and understanding at death, the righteous went to Abraham's bosom, paradise, a place where they were expecting a resurrection, see, of the body. And they were expecting to meet again. The body and the spirit would be together again. Now, where the Old Testament doctrine of Hades as to location is not clear. And so it's called the heart of the earth sometimes, see? Jesus, when he died, it says that he went to the heart of the earth. That is, he preached to spirits in prison. Where were they? Well now, what does it mean? It means that when Jesus was put to death, his body was taken down. It was, I don't know how long. It may have been, in fact, if you study the scripture real technically, I think you'll find that the body of Jesus was not buried till just before sunup the next day. And I can prove that from the scriptures. But see, Joseph of Arimathea, when he found out that Jesus was dead, he went to Pilate and begged for his body. And old Joe was going down the road, and he says, "Hey, Nick, where are you going?" He said, I'm going down here. I'm going to bear the Lord. What? The Lord's dead? Jesus dead? Yeah, he's dead. Well, come hit me. All right. He goes and gets 100 pounds of embalming fluid, materials. Well, I don't know how long it took him to get it. He may have had it, stashed away. He wasn't expecting Jesus to be put to death. Nicodemus wasn't, neither was Joseph of Arimathea. But he has to go and get permission from Pilate. Pilate said, "Well, wait a minute. I have to find out whether he's dead or not." And so he sends the centurion. And he finds out from the centurion. Calls him in. I don't know how long it took him to get that centurion. But anyway, the centurion came before Pilate. Centurion said, "Yes, he's dead." "All right, Joe, you can have him." And then Joe meets Nicodemus. And then they get together. And they take the body down from the cross, all right, and they embalm it. The women are watching him doing it. All right. But now the scripture says one of the thieves said to Jesus, "Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." And he said, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise." All right, now, when did Jesus go to paradise? Immediately when he said, "I commend my spirit unto God." See, "into thy hands I commend my spirit." His body didn't go to paradise. The thief's body didn't go to paradise. Yet Jesus said to the thief, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise." That means that instant. All right, when they die. Now, so it's not talking about their bodies. And yet 1 Peter 3:18 and so on tells us that Christ was suffered the just for the unjust. He was put to death in the flesh, but quickened in the spirit, by which he went and preached to spirits in prison. All right? Now, prison, paradise, Hades. That's all paradise is. Hades is a place of safekeeping. It didn't have the idea of torment with it. The word did not originally mean that. Yet, paradise, Hades, has two, according to the Lord's parable or illustration or historical account, whichever a man may, whichever view he has concerned it. He's teaching the same thing, that there was a great gulf fixed between them, see? And the rich man said that he was tormented in these flames, see? But all he could see was Father Abraham. See, he didn't see God. He wasn't asking for Christ. He didn't ask for an angel. But he saw Father Abraham, see? And he saw Lazarus in his bosom. Alright, now that's as far as he could see. In other words, that's the intermediate state. And that's the reason why, in studying the book of Revelation, any man that believes, has this view, and believes as I believe concerning that, he cannot see human beings in heaven in the book of Revelation. That's why the heavenly hosts, that's why the 24 elders, that's why the four living creatures, that's why the great host are angelic beings. I mean, it's easy to interpret them as angelic beings rather than human beings. See, those that say the 24 elders represents the redeemed. You see, the 24 elders sing the song that God has redeemed men, not them, but men out of every nation, every tongue, every kindred and tribe. And not one place do you read about children of God going to heaven. Not or anywhere else in the Bible. You read from Matthew to the end. You don't read about a man dies and he goes to heaven and gets his reward. That's additional and chiefly tradition. Well, Paul tells us that it's better for him to depart and be with Christ. Well, now then that doesn't mean that he's to be with Christ. He has to be in heaven. And Paul says that, you know, they usually quote 2 Corinthians 5 that says, for we know that if this earthly tabernacle, you know, if this earthly house be dissolved, we have a building of God, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. All right. Well, what Paul is doing, if you go back to the fourth chapter, in the verse 14, you'll see that he's talking about the resurrection. But Paul spans the intermediate state. Whenever Paul speaks of the resurrection, he never takes in the intermediate state in whatsoever. When he in the 15th chapter, 1 Corinthians, he tells us about the body. It's sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body, see? It's sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. Well, how long is it, Paul, between it being sown in corruption and raised in incorruption? He's saying it as though it's sown, it's raised. It's sown, it's raised. But the time that the body died in the days of Christ when he was upon the earth, they're still sown in corruption. Some are going to die and will not see corruption. But they won't be in the grave that long. As far as corruption, its process is there. But it'll be a corruptible body that was sown. But raised in incorruption. So that's the reason it says, and death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. What I'm trying to point out is that the place of departed spirit no longer, when a man dies, his body may be go to the grave, it may go to the sea, it may go to a fish, it may go to a wild beast, may be burned in a fire, wherever it may be, see? Well, that's death. Death is going to give up their hold. Hades is going to give up the spirits. The grave can only give up the body. But Hades will give up the spirit. And death, the grave, and Hades, place of the spirit, are cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And that's the reason why the Beatitude over here says, blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. For of such the second death hath no power. Well, it's place of spirits,
That's all you can say.
All right? Suppose
a man, was caught up that time, that's
paradise, yeah. Now notice, Paul was called up to, in the 12th chapter of 2 Corinthians, Paul says that he wants to talk about revelations, plural, and it's plural in the Greek. And he says, and he tells about his first experience, the first revelation, that he was called up to heaven. But in the second, he was called up into paradise. Two different revelations. There's not a... those two prepositions alone will teach you the reality of the intermediate state. See? Now, he was permitted to enter one, but the other he was not permitted to enter. He was caught up into paradise. But now, that was in vision. Just like John was saw these things come to pass, you see. But it was given to him of God. Now, the sea gave up the dead. Well, now, the only thing the sea could give up was the body, you see. Death and Hades gave up the dead. Delivered up the dead, which were in them. And they were judged every man according to their works. Now, there's nothing, I guess, that's done more complicated the Bible study concerning concerning death and after death what than the translation of the word hell. It's the word hell. It is an English word that translates Gehenna, Hades, and the grave, death itself. Now, you have the same thing in 1 Corinthians 15, where it says, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave. Now, the word is Hades. Where is thy victory? See? O death, where is thy sting? No sting in the body anymore. But, O Hades, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, Paul distinctly tells us about saying, Hades, you're going to have to give up your dead, see? He says, you can't hold them always. The grave cannot hold the body of the child of God always. And so that's what he says. So when, but you notice when that is, when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? Now, you can't say that now. Or you can say it anticipatively. You can say it prophetically speaking, saying it as though it's fact. But you can't say it from a standpoint of experience and say there's no sting in death. See? When are you going to say it from an experimental standpoint? When this mortal shall have put on immortality? See? Then, he says, shall be brought to pass. When this corruption shall have put on incorruption, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? Why? Because you've got an immortal body now. You've got an incorruptible body now. You've got one that death, the axe cannot claim. The sword cannot touch anymore. It's powerless against it. Oh, Hades, where is thy victory? There's no place. Chapter 21, verse 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. The first verse of chapter 21 speaks of a new heaven and a new earth. Verse 11 of chapter 20 says that the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. There are several questions or several thoughts that we need to kind of consider before we end this passage. And that is the time when. When will the earth and the heavens flee away? When will the earth be destroyed? Not with reference to the year or the month or the week or the day or the hour, but when in the order of eschatological events, the last days, the last things, will it be before the second resurrection or after the second resurrection? Will it be before the millennium? Will it be before the personal reign of Christ or after the personal reign of Christ? You know, there are those who hold to the doctrine like Dr. Gill. Dr. Gill believes in what is known as a spiritual reign of Christ, which will occur on this earth. He believes that the personal reign of Christ will be on the new heavens and will be on the new earth. And so that's the reason. What I mean by when will the heavens flee away? After the first resurrection and before the millennium, or after the millennium and before the final judgment? Because notice, and I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face? The face of him that sat on the throne. The earth and the heaven fled away. So that, in chapter 20, if we follow the logical order, and which to me seems the proper, we would put first, at the coming of Christ, the binding of Satan. See, when Christ comes, actually, if you go back to the 19th chapter, you'll have Christ coming, the destruction of the casting of the beast and the false prophet into the lake of fire. That'll be the first major event. Then the binding of Satan. Then the resurrection. Then the change, the translation of the saints. See? Then the reign upon the earth. Then the, which is the millennium. Then at the end of the millennium, the second resurrection. Then the loosing of Satan. And then the final conflict of God and Satan, and where Satan then is cast into the lake of fire. Then we have the final resurrection, the resurrection of the wicked, before the great white throne of God, at which time it seems that the earth and the heavens flee away. That's at least my conception of the order of events, at least. Now, there are those that place the passing of the heaven and earth that it doesn't, that the millennium takes place upon the new earth. Well, then you'd have to put this event back over here before verse 5, see? Actually in verse 4 of chapter 20. Well, he talks about the first resurrection, the second resurrection, the millennial reign, you see, the second resurrection, the loosing of Satan. And now, for the first time in Revelation, we see, have the information about the earth and heaven passing away. Therefore, I put it at the point when it is mentioned. Unless there's some good reason to take it out of its context, out of its connection with the general judgment. See, the judgment of the great white throne. All right, brings us to, let's read the last chapter of 2 Peter, third chapter, and because here we have a distinct statement. Well, let's just read some selected verses, verse 7. But the heavens and the earth, which are now...
Where are you at now?
Now I'm in 2 Peter, chapter 3, verse 7. But the heavens and the earth, which are now, by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire, against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Now, skip down to verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also, and the works that are therein, shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. Now, for the time being, let's just notice one thing in these verses. And that is in verse 7. Reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Now what does that seem to me? That seems to indicate the time when the heavens and the earth will pass away. Why? Because he's connecting it with a judgment. Well, Revelation 20:11 connects it with a judgment. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat upon it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. Now, there are many things that we can bring out here before we finish, but I want to establish, first of all, the time when the earth will flee away. And I maintain that it will be in connection with the day of judgment. See? Now, in chapter 20, in verse 4 or 5 or 7, you're going to have it, before the millennium. We're talking about a period of 1,000 years in duration in the events of God, don't you see? So the time when is going to affect your outlook on the passage in 2 Peter. It's going to affect Genesis 6, 7, and 8. It will affect your understanding concerning as it was in the days of Noah and of Lot. Those comparisons, it'll have effect upon your the interpretation of those passages. Now, If we say that that is the proper time, that's the time that the Bible seems to indicate, let's advance to this thought, this idea. How many times has or will the world be destroyed? Now, you might think that's a foolish question, but of course the earth was destroyed by water, according to Genesis 7, you see, 6 through 8, 7th chapter primarily. Then, and how was the earth destroyed by water? Now, you notice the Lord said, even as and so as, and in like manner, or comparison, in the same way, or after the similitude, or the likeness of it, or get this lesson from that, in other words. And if the lessons are detailed, then we'd have to come to this conclusion that the water destroyed the whole earth. And yet, the earth was not annihilated. But we'll save that idea for a little later. But here, what we want to see is that in Genesis, the earth was destroyed. According to biblical terminology, destroyed, perished. The earth that then was, perished. See? Alright? By water. And that water, and here's the similitude, that water that destroyed the earth proceeded from beneath. The earth broke up. Convulsions of the earth. Earthquakes. Eruption. And water just bubbled up from the ground. And also, water came down out of heaven. Rain, God rained up on the earth. Water. So there was a twofold attack of the water. And that water was 15 cubits, some 21 to 22 feet higher than the highest mountain upon the earth. What does that seem to indicate? And the destruction of the flood, of the earth by the flood, affected all animal life upon the earth. It affected the fowls of the air. See? Now, the reason I ask that question is this. Isaiah 65 and Isaiah 66 and 2 Peter 3 and Revelation 21:1 and Revelation 20:11 are the norm passages. They are the foundation passages. They are the principal passages that deal with the passing away of this earth and the new earth. And from those passages, people have come to this conclusion that Isaiah 65, 17 to 20, and 2 Peter 3, 7, 10 to 13, are talking about a destruction of the earth that only involves purging, purifying, renovation, restoration, making it over, remaking the earth. Whereas, they say that Revelation 21:1 speaks of a different earth. Therefore, the earth that is spoken of to them in Isaiah 65 and 2 Peter 3, to them that is a comparison like the flood. The flood destroyed the earth, but the earth still was intact. It was just everything on it was dead. There was no life. It had to start again, but they didn't start. They started from something. Whereas they hold that Revelation 21:1 says that I saw a new heaven and a new earth means that God has brought judgment upon the earth again. Not by fire, because we don't know. Because the Bible, they say, don't specify. But it does specify that the earth is going to be purged or renovated by fire. See? Now, if that be true, then the new heaven and the new earth, spoken of in Revelation 21:1, is a new creation. This earth comes into being from nothing. The heaven spoken of here is a recreative act of God, has nothing to do with remaking the earth or remaking the heavens. And therefore, they say that that we have a destruction of the renovated earth. This natural earth as it now is will be destroyed in that it'll be cleansed, purged, purified, prettied up. Okay. Now, that people hold that view who are have all sorts of views concerning the millennial problem. Whether they're even dispensationalists or at outs with one another. Some holding to one idea and some to the other. But my understanding of the scriptures is that that Isaiah 65 and Isaiah 66 and 2 Peter 3 and Revelation 21:1 speaks of the same one and the same event. That God will yet destroy the earth and the atmospheric heavens, not the starry heavens, not the sun and the moon, necessarily. Now, the Bible says that in Revelation 21:23, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. Now, that passage doesn't say that there's not going to be a sun, or the moon is not going to continue. It just says it's not going to be necessary. It's not going to be needed. Why? Because of that the Lamb will be the light thereof. Now, I'm not saying that the sun and the moon positively will not be affected. See? Because certainly in the book of Revelation, we've already seen that there'll be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. But it doesn't say that there's going to cease to be. Nowhere.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.